Welcome to the Partners for Progressive Israel podcast. I am your host, Nicole Cooper, recording in Jerusalem. Today I am happy to meet Yonatan Mizrahi, the director of Emek Shavle, an organization of archaeologists that work for peace and advocate for recognition of shared histories in this land.
That both sides will
it can be tricky to see how important archaeology is to the conflict here from North America, as it doesn't make a lot of headlines. But due to its use as a strategy for legitimizing Israel's claim to the land, or using national parks and heritage sites as a form of settlement, only recognizing Jewish heritage, which causes the displacement of Palestinians and an erasure of their material heritage, antiquities play a major role. If you've listened to the last few episodes about Silwan and Susia, you know that archaeology is central to the vitality of these villages, which we touch on in this interview. We sat outside of their office in the garden, so I apologize for all the white noise of the wind, but I'm sure you'll enjoy all the birds.
We have house demolitions, eviction, and orders for entire villages.
Okay, so my name is Yonatan Mizrahi.
Peace for understanding and analyzing the conflict and the power of the Israeli authorities. And so how is archaeology a piece of that puzzle,
the role
and
of
how does it affect
in the
people's
conflict,
general livelihood and the displacement issues?
We are very much involved.
So I think when we talk about archaeology, first of all, we have to understand that archaeology in real is something very far from maybe the image we are having about archaeology that especially comes, I must say, from Hollywood and places like that. Eventually archaeology, based on the idea that there are many ancient sites that were destroyed during the history and rebuilt and destroyed again and rebuilt. Many of these ancient sites are located actually in places where people live today. You know, people still continuing living on ancient sites. And when you thinking about this land, this area in general, could be what we are calling the Middle East, could be the Mediterranean area, we have hundreds of thousands of archaeological sites. That's something that has to be understood. And archaeology is a field, is a science that we're trying to, we research the land in order to understand better the past, or to understand better the present as well, by the way, that's the main goal. And I'm giving all this kind of a long introduction, maybe it's too long, I don't know, in order to explain that when it comes to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the question of who owns the land very much goes with the historical narrative, which, if we go talking, thinking about the Israelis especially, so we, the Israelis, we came to this land, I don't know, two, three, four generations, you know, most of us are immigrants, and we came here because of our history. We believe this is our land, we have the Bible, we have the tradition, we have maybe the historical text, and that's what brought us here, but we also have the archaeology excavations that is a tool to find maybe evidence, or if you want, proof that the Jewish people used to live here. And many times, the archaeology is the only physical evidence, because the historical texts are not in physical evidence. And many times when you find a physical evidence for, I don't know, for a past Jewish present or something like that, people try to think that it means that the place belongs exclusively to one side, exclusively to us. I can give you an example. If you're going to a place like a village called Silwan, which is a Palestinian village, it's a village like many other villages that sits on an archaeological site, which contains history of four or 5,000 years of history. Okay, many layers. Some of the layers are from different periods, but some of the layers are also identified with a Jewish past, Jewish history. It could be the time of the Temple, the Second Temple, or the time of the Judean Kingdom, the time of King David, King Solomon, and the other kings, which are two important periods in the Jewish history. So for some people, when they see these periods exist or find, if they find evidence from these periods, they come and say, in the name of this period, we have the right to take over the land, we have the right to annex the land maybe, or to have sovereignty over the land. And that makes it very complicated because the whole land of Israel slash Palestine has layers from different periods. Mm-hmm. Not just Muslim and Jews, Christian and others, many other periods. So we are coming and saying that the history and the layers cannot be identified as in a national way. I mean, you cannot come and say if it's a Jewish, it belongs to the Israeli people. if it's Muslims, it belongs to the Palestinians, and so on. It's one history, or one long history, and you cannot divide the land based on that. That's the main thing that we're saying.
I don't know if that already answers the question, or if you have a different answer, or a more nuanced answer about why archaeology for you is at the heart of the conflict.
Okay. Yeah. This is a conflict about land. Yeah. This is the main idea. Both sides believe that the land belongs to them. Okay, and now, when it comes, why we believe that archaeology is probably the heart of the conflict is because, like I said before, the historical narrative is very much playing a role in this kind of claiming. Like, if you're asking Israelis, why do you live here? Well, I mean, you are immigrant, you came here. Maybe even if we came here 100 years ago or something like that. Why do you live in this land? So they come and say, our history is here. We belong there. And the justifications many times come from the archaeological find. It means that people will take you to Hebron, for example, and tell you, you see, these ruins emphasize our history or whatsoever. So both sides, but especially the Israeli side, needs the archaeology to legitimize its presence here, because we haven't been here for thousands of years, actually. Doesn't matter what exactly happened, but as a nation, as a dominant culture. And both sides saying that the land is ours in the name of history, but also, and that's something very important, I think that eventually if you ask people about why this land is so important for them, they're willing to say that, okay, we understand that a major part of the West Bank eventually will not remain Israeli. We understand that most of the Israelis don't really think about Nablus or Ramallah, the history as the future of Israel. But when it comes to the historical places, when you ask Israelis, what do you think about Jerusalem, for example, City of David, then they said, listen, this is not about human rights, not about people's rights. It's very much about our historical rights. And we cannot, for example, share Jerusalem or give Jerusalem to the other side because this is the core of our identity. So I think the problem of this conflict in general is that although it affects the life of both nations, unfortunately, many times people are less important than the culture and the heritage. And that's something very sad about it, but people are willing to fight for the heritage here or for the historical places more than they're even willing to fight for better life, unfortunately. This is how I see the conflict here.
And are there things that the Israeli authorities do in the excavation practices that are not in line with international conservation standards?
Again, it depends who you ask. But obviously, I mean, many of the Israeli excavations are very professional excavations and definitely goes in line with the methods that we are using. Mm-hmm. All the excavation in the West Bank and East Jerusalem are not in line with the international conventions and the international law regard that, according to the international law, excavations considered a kind of another method of, or another way of settlement.
Right.
Okay? So if you're not allowed to settle in the West Bank, you're also not allowed to do an excavation in the West Bank. In that respect, Israel is obviously ignoring this kind of charter or conventions. Unfortunately, today there's more and more cases where Israel emphasizing one part of the site or one or specific period of the site, mostly period that can be identified as Israeli or Jewish history, and unfortunately not really providing the long history of the site. And that's a case that that definitely exists in a place like Susia, in a place like Shiloh in the West Bank. Many times also exist in the City of David. And also we have a problem that sometimes Israel is not following enough the methods how archaeology should be done. Like, in most of the cases, Israel is definitely using the common methods in the international community, but when it comes to tense places like the old city, we're facing a lot of political pressure on the way the archaeology has been done.
And what's the relationship with the settler organizations and the Israeli authorities who are dealing with the excavations?
In many places, especially places like Silwan, City of David, the settlers realized that they will never be the majority. Mm-hmm. Okay, there are a small group of settlers living there, but they're not the majority. The majority are Palestinians. And they also realized that it would be very difficult to change the character of historical places because you're not allowed to build on historical sites, you're not allowed to build on archaeological places. You're supposed to, if you think about Jerusalem, Israel understands they have to protect and keep the character of the historical Jerusalem. The settlers organization understood that by developing the archaeological sites and by So the settler organization understood that when it comes to historical sites, what the Israeli public will accept is talking about the Jewish / Israeli people history. And when you're coming about Jerusalem, when you're talking about Jerusalem and emphasizing the Jewish history or the Israeli people history, it's something that's easier for them to explain why they are settling in East Jerusalem, why they're settling in Silwan. Again, why they're settling in Hebron, why they're settling in Samaria area whatsoever, when they can explain it through archaeology and emphasize the Jewish history, it's a very powerful tool for them to gain legitimation in the Israeli public, that's what they want, and also in the international public, especially if you're talking about the North American people or the Western world, which also has an interest in the history of this land because it's also the Holy Land and things like that. Obviously, if you're talking to the Chinese or Japanese, it's a totally different story because this narrative is less relevant for them, okay? Fine so far? So if you're going again to the case of Silwan, which is a very good case study, the settlers understood that by developing the site, they're gaining land, because the archaeological site become part of the land. They're gaining legitimation, which is very important. And also they're developing the place and changing the character of the places. And for example, today, if you're talking to the average Israeli about Silwan, he knows nothing about the village, doesn't even know exactly where it's located, but all the Israelis know where City of David is, the archaeological site. So through archaeology, they really succeeded, unfortunately, to erase the Palestinians' identity of the place and to bring in light, especially the Israelis' narrative. And that's a very powerful tool for them. So they don't need more settlers, more people, they just need more tourists. And that's what they're doing.
How many tourists pass through the City of David, do you think?
I think it's around 400,000. That's talking about different numbers, but I think the numbers are around 400,000.
Per year,
of course.
Yeah.
But also, if you're talking about the numbers, it's about 400,000 per year, which is a lot of numbers. I mean, it's, I think, between the 10 or the 20 most popular sites in Israel. But it's also the quality of the numbers, because all the Israeli students who are coming to Jerusalem, visiting City of David, Israeli soldiers that are coming to visit Jerusalem, most of the time goes to City of David, people who are going to a project which is called the Taglit, Birthrights, going to City of David. The quality of the people, it means that if you bring Israelis, and not, for example, I don't know, pilgrims who are coming to follow Jesus, these people are much more involved in the conflict, much more aware, much more care. So if they are supporting the settlers are gaining a lot. It's not just the numbers of people, it's also which kind of people.
And the settler group, Elad, is like working with the Israeli Antiquities Authority?
Yeah.
Is there any other place where there's a group like that that would be running a national park? Like, that part is very bizarre to me.
It's very bizarre because what we have to understand is the national parks in Israel are operated by governmental authority.
Uh-huh.
It's not a private. The idea is that it's a national park and it should be protected and developed and managed by governmental authority for the benefit of everybody. You know? And this is how it works in Israel. You have like 60 or 70 national parks. This is the body who operates them is the National Park Authority. City of David in East Jerusalem is a unique case when the government decided that Elad will operate the site. And actually managing the site together with the settlers. And the settlers take an important role there and influencing a lot how the site looks, how the site will develop, and things like that, and how the site tools will look like as well. It's a very unique case when it comes to national park. It's not a unique case when it comes to archaeological sites in the West Bank. Also, archaeological sites like Tel Shiloh, north to Ramallah, operated by a private organization, and also another place like which called Susia in South Hebron Hills, also operated by the settlers. So in the West Bank, we see a lot of involvement of the settlers' organization, which is not very much exist in Israel, obviously.
There's internationally agreed upon conventions for the protection of cultural sites in areas of conflict, and it's mostly around if it's necessary to preserve and protect the site, then the governing body's allowed to go through with it. But how do you decide what's necessary to protect and what's not?
Well, first of all, and this is again maybe something to explain, which is a bit different than Hollywood films.
Yeah.
The best way to protect archaeology is actually not to excavate. The best way is just to keep it on the land. Inside the land and protected, and because archaeology means a damage. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to take out the soil, you have to take out artifacts, you have to take out the structure sometimes, you change the landscape. So the best way to protect the site is not to excavate. Obviously, we are in this world, we have an interest to have more knowledge and to develop sites. But when Israel decided to excavate in order to gain more knowledge or in order to develop touristic sites, this kind of an activity is activity which very relevant to the conflict. It's very relevant to the idea that we are changing the landscape, we are developing the touristic site, and that places are using for our benefit. Like we are the one who making money out of it, we are the one who explaining why it's important to our culture, to our history. So if Israel would like to avoid increasing the conflict, what Israel should do is hold excavations in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, which is very simple. So when you think about, when the settlers realized that the way to take over or to change the landscape is through archaeology and through excavation, and they cannot build residency, for example, and for about a decade they are already managing the operating the sites, especially Silwan, City of David site, they also understood that the best way to build is not to call this building a residency, obviously they're not allowed, but also to build something for which is supposed to serve the archaeology, which is, by the way, a very problematic term, because what does it mean to serve the archaeology? Archaeology, you know, it's still life, doesn't exist really.
Speaks for itself, exactly.
Yeah. But then according to the Israeli law, the idea of the Jerusalem historical area, like the old city and its surrounding, supposed to be protected and preserved more or less as it is. Like, we're not, the Israeli law, like, which makes sense, such an important historical city will not change by building, I don't know, malls, neighborhoods, and so on. Although that was the main goal, the first goal of the settler. And then said, okay, we will do an excavation and we will build a touristic center which will serve the visitors who are coming to see the archaeology. And then the government said, okay, if it's the planning and building committees come and say, if it's for the benefit of the archaeology and the touristic centers, it's something we should permit to be built because it's a touristic site and historical site. And then somehow, and then they began to do a very large excavations at the entrance of Silwan, and they wanted to build on the top of this excavation a very large structure, which is supposed to be something like 16,000 square meters, something like in the size of a major mall in Israel, at least. And that kind of structure is supposed to be built in front of the walls of the old city, above the most important archaeological excavations that they are doing today in Silwan, City of David. And in one hand, supposed to cover or hide or also destroy part of the excavation, and also in other hand, to change the character of the whole historical area. So we in Emek Shaveh and other organization and other people in Silwan and everybody thought it's a very outrageous plan, submitted objection to this plan. And eventually what happened is that the National Committee of Planning and Housing accepted our appeal and saying that the structure must the structure, which is called Kenem compound, must be much, much smaller than what the settlers wanted, cannot cover the whole archaeological area, and should be very functional, but only for the purposes of what tourists immediately need when they're coming to the site. And in that respect, they actually acknowledge the importance of the archaeological site and the historical area of Jerusalem. This is the game, but the interesting battle was that from the Israeli point of view, the Israeli Antiquity Authority actually, and the Nature and Park Authority, two bodies that are supposed to protect the archaeology, actually cooperated with the settlers and went to the committees supporting the settlers' plan. From our understanding, the Antiquity Authority, at least, supposed to have a professional position, thinking what is the best way to protect the archaeology, not what is the best way to build a structure above the archaeology. And that's, you can see an example how the professional body is actually working very closely with the settlers, in especially in Jerusalem, but also in the West Bank.
Do you think that's about economics, that they would side with that?
It's also economics, but it's also politics, which goes together. Politics and economy go together. It's first of all because Elad has a lot of budget and a lot of money that they're investing in archaeology. But also Elad has a lot of power. And eventually it has a lot of governmental support. And I think it's eventually the governmental policy is about changing the character of the old city towards more Israeli / Jewish identity, something like that.
And do you think that the...
טלי, תודה רבה. זה פתוח שם? נשאר פתוח, נכון? שלחת הכל? תודה רבה, ואנחנו נדבר. ביי, תודה.
ביי. Do you think it is actually possible to be able to celebrate material heritage and protect and preserve a heritage site in a site of conflict?
Yes, but you have to solve the conflict first.
Yeah.
Eventually, you cannot... It's like asking, do you think it's possible to build a settlement and manage the conflict? I don't think so, eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Especially here, this history, people are willing to fight for this history, or what the history emphasizes sometimes.
Oh.
So it's another tool in this kind of conflict, and the only way really to solve this problem, or if you would like to reach to a goal, where we're still doing excavations and we're still preserving the archaeological site and presenting them to the public, it first of all means we have to reach to a political solution.
Mm-hmm.
If, by the way, if Israelis will recognize that this is the only way to do an excavation, I think Israelis will decide maybe faster to reach to a political solution. But Israel now feels they can do whatever they want, so they're actually ignoring this kind of idea that political solution should be.
And in your sort of information booklet that I've read through in that section, talking about your sort of management plans for the Givati lot in specific test, you talk about the preservation, administration, and presentation being like a good way to deal with sites whilst there is no political solution. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean... We cannot ignore that, listen, we really think that the main goal is to get a political solution. But we cannot ignore that things happening. And Givati Park has not already been excavated, or is going, this is an ongoing excavation, it's ongoing excavation while we speak. So considering that it's ongoing excavation, we can talk until tomorrow about excavation shouldn't happen, but it's ongoing. So what we're trying to do and what we suggested a few times is what should be the solution when the excavation already been done. And what we are saying that few important factors should be, first of all, keeping layers from all the different periods, explaining how the history of the village is connected maybe to the history of the archaeological site, providing kind of a narrative to the public which explains the complicity of the history of this place, And also considering how the residents can benefit from the archaeological sites or the management of the sites. This is the main thing that we think, at least now, should... And also, by the way, we think that Israel should follow the international charters regards to excavation and regards to preservation. So at least if Israel will see that this is will be the main factors when they're doing the excavation, I think it will definitely change the character of Givati parking lot. And I think it means that the Kedem compound will not be built above Givati parking lot, at least not in the way they want it to happen today.
This is my naive and slightly, well, super curious and excited about archaeology question, which is that it seems really simple to me that, okay, over time, layers of different eras would happen because of things falling over and wars and people staying in the same places because they're good places to live, because it's an agricultural site. But, like, can you just explain to me briefly how it works that on, you know, there's a Muslim site and then underneath it there's Hebrew writing and then underneath that there's a building from the first century, like, CE? Like, I'm just assuming there's more science, obviously, than I know, and I want to know how that works.
Yeah, okay, it's very important, maybe, question, actually, because how archaeology works. Archaeology is a very slow walk. You're doing it very slowly and with very gentle tools most of the time, and you're excavating from the surface all the way down, kind of layer after layer. What you're doing, actually, you're just taking out the soil, keeping the structure and the other evidence you find. Not exactly, but definitely the stone and part of the structures. You're taking out the artifacts all the time, like coins and pottery, okay? And you always have to measure what you find, and you have to measure the levels and the context and things like that. And it's mean that if you're going to, and most of the archaeological sites in our region, and again, you can call it the Middle East, you can call it Mediterranean, whatever, you have more than one layer. People came. What happened is that people came, established a place, they left it for many different reasons, economic reasons, security reasons, whatsoever. Okay, I don't know what happened. Who knows? And then it was abandoned, and many times it was covered by nature for all kind of cases. And then people came again, and sometimes used the same structure, sometimes built above the ancient structures, sometimes changes the function of the ancient structure, and you can see there's another layer and another layer with different structures. Many times the city is expanded, especially through the development, and eventually when archaeologists come to a site and he excavates very slowly, he finds structures from the last period to the earliest period, okay? Although the earliest period will be in the bottom and the last period will be in the top, and again it's much more complicated, and it's not like that all the time because sometimes people are changing things. People used ancient structure. And then you have what the main goal of the archaeologist is, first of all, to understand which layers he found, what is the period of the layers, and what was the function of the structures that he found. And it's very complicated. But in the same time, it's not necessarily provide the historical narrative that people want. If I found structure and I can tell you that was the main street, here was the temples, here was the palaces, here was the common houses, whatsoever. It gives you information about maybe the development of the structures of the city or the layout of the city, but not about the historical story that you wanted about specific king and specific figure whatsoever. And that's, and eventually what I want to say, maybe it's a long explanation to say that eventually archaeology is a very long walk with very slow assumptions about what we found and what we understand. And that's how it works in archaeology.
And it's always influenced by whoever is doing it.
And it's also influenced by whoever he does it, if it's a male, female, what is your religion, what is your ethnic resource, what is your interest, who taught you. Because, and that's something very important, eventually archaeology is based on interpretation. It doesn't matter what we found. We can find a chair. The interpretation is who used this chair. What period the chair was used, or was it a chair or not. Many times it's what we want to find or what we assuming that we found. And the interpretation is very important because archaeology is not an exact science. Now, it's misleading because people come and say, but I saw a specific structure. So it is an exact science. But seeing a specific structure doesn't mean we understand what was the purpose or what was the use of the structure. Okay? I hope this long answer.
No, it's great. I mean, it's basically how history gets written every 100 years over because there's a new perspective, and it's kind of the same thing in my mind.
It's very simple. You visited us.
Yeah.
You can say later on, I visited a house owned by an NGO or belonged to an NGO, or I visited an Arabic house, or I visited the street of the Prime Minister residency, and, and it's all have a different context.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
And it's all true.
All true. and can you talk about how you and I guess your coworkers, your organization, sees antiquities belonging to all peoples a bit more? And
I mean, there's kind of a perception that archaeology is kind of a national thing. Now, nationalism sometimes could be very dangerous. And when you think about it, first of all, it goes from two different point of view. First of all, the obligation of the nation, or the state, is to protect. Is to protect the cultural heritage, the cultural heritage site. It's to protect the ancient site. It doesn't matter who lived here. It's not necessarily. Doesn't important if the site used to be Christian, Muslims, pagan, I don't know, Canaanite, Romans, Jewish. We have the obligation to protect it, like every other nation. Like if you go to Rome, you're supposed to protect the Etruscan layers, the Roman layers, whatever. Okay. And the other layers as well, the Christian whatsoever. And that's the obligation. And it means an understanding that the people who live here, they're supposed to protect this heritage because it's part of the part of the story of the land. And it means that the Palestinians have the obligation to protect the Jewish layers, and the Israelis have the obligation to protect the Muslim and the Christian layers and the Jewish layers as well, all together. And it doesn't mean that the Romans should come back here and protect the Roman layers. I don't know, the Vatican will protect the Christian layers and the Muslims, whoever they are, by the way, I'm not sure it's the Palestinians. I don't know, maybe the Mecca will decide to protect. It doesn't work this way. That's kind of a common sense. But it's also something very important for us from another angle and come and say that if you're talking about specific layer, doesn't matter which one. Let's talk about the Roman period. During the Roman period, many different ethnic and religious groups lived here. There were Jews, there were at the beginning of Christianity, but there were pagans. There were different kinds of pagans, or kind of Hellenistic influence, Eastern influence, Western influence. Western, I'm talking about West of Europe, doesn't matter, okay? Different religious groups live together. Different ethnic groups, white, black, whatsoever, also, obviously. And they all live together. Now, we don't know exactly. We cannot come and say that specific ethnic groups means that we have to focus in this ethnic group and ignore the others, first of all. And also, we cannot come and say that the Roman period belongs to us because Jewish people lived in the Roman period. Like, the Roman cannot come and say that the Roman period belongs to them because the history is much more complicated. We cannot name the Canaanites and say the Canaanites belong to the Palestinians, the Judeans belong to the Israelis. We're talking about a long history here. We're not even sure that these ancestors are really belongs directly to us. It's kind of a totally different culture, different period. And by looking at these cultures in the eyes of the present, we first of all don't understand exactly the period. And we're coming and showing the past as something very limited in the eyes of today, which is not what was used to be in the past. What I want to say in very short, the Jewish people who lived here 2,000 years ago, even if they are Jewish, they have a different way of life.
Yeah.
And they were part of a region which is totally different than our life today. So all the nations are obliged to protect this kind of cultural heritage sites, which shows Jewish history, as well as others. That's the whole idea. We cannot look at it from a very narrow eyes. This is mine and this is yours.
Long and complicated indeed. But how is Emek Sheve helping? How do you try to resolve all the conflict around material heritage? And what do you hope for the future?
What we're doing, trying to do a lot of public advocacy in regards to what I said about archaeology.
Mm-hmm.
We strongly believe that if both sides will acknowledge the history of this land, I'm not sure they are, although sometimes they say that, and understand that you cannot really divide the past, that mine, that's yours. It it will be a major step to recognize the others' belonging and rights here. And that's one thing we're doing. But also in the practical way, we are challenging plans in the planning committees or in court, which we are seeing that actually increasing the conflict and many times helping the settlers to take over land or change the character of the land or affect the life of the Palestinians in the West Bank, especially in cases where archaeology is the excuse or the explanation why displacement is happening in all kind of versions. And eventually we see ourselves as an organization that deals with the conflict and they deal with human rights. It's also very important to us to explain that cultural heritage is part of the human rights, mm-hmm. like other human rights, you know, values, especially in this place. In the future, we see ourselves struggling in what I told you now, in this kind of branches, maybe.
Yeah.
This is it, in short.
Great.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming and asking.
Yeah.
Good luck for you.
Thanks.
Glad to.
Bye.
Yeah, bye.